Podcast People's Podcast. Hello and welcome to this week's episode of What Most People Think. And after a brilliant period of weather, the weather is set to change. And it never fails to amaze me how surprised people are by changes in temperature. Because if you think about temperature, it can only really do three things, which is stay the same, get hotter or get colder. But it always comes as a shock. And as I'm bringing in this week's guest, Stig Abel. Stig, I mean, humans, are we ever going to wrap our head around weather? That it changes.
I love springtime weather because there's no agreement on what the weather's going to be like. So there's some people in full parkas and hats and gloves. And then there's blokes like me who wear shorts and a t-shirt more or less for an 11 and a half months of the year, whatever happens. Yeah. I'm one of those annoying men, middle-aged men. When I'm not working, I'm in shorts. I don't really care what the weather is.
If you haven't got your shins out, you don't feel like you're alive even.
No, isn't it funny? And I've become addicted to that short. I mean, I've got horrible legs. No one needs to see my legs. But
some men, they just get in them and they won't get out of them. It's almost like an ideological thing. The surprise at changing weather, I think, is up there with how surprised the people are that children look like their parents. Again, you know, it's one of the most likely things, but it never fails to amaze us, does it? Don't you look like your dad? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. There's a genetic reason for that, I reckon it's because it's the British desire to fill silence. That's what it is. People just can't handle silence. I'm terrible for it, but if you just were just quiet for 3 seconds, I would blurt something shit out just to fill the endless void.
Well, you know, it's a good thing that you're working in radio then.
Yeah.
Stig, you've got a new book out. First, tell us the title of the book.
It's called The Burial Place. It's the third. I started writing a detective series. The first one came out 2 years ago. This is the third. It's called The Burial Place, and it came out a couple of weeks ago.
So what I think is interesting about this is I was reading the blurb, and it's in part inspired by the archaeological digs and all the historical sites that your old man used to take you on during the holidays. So on that note, one of the subjects we're going to discuss this week, as it is the Easter holidays, and we like to, you know, throw the focus on the male experience.
Yes.
It is about, you know, holidays for dads. I was at Chesterton World of Adventure last week, and I had a situation where my son wanted me to go on a scary ride, and I didn't really want to go on it, but I did it anyway. So we're going to unpack some of that. And this is not to say that it's not hard being a mum too. I always have to caveat that, otherwise there'll be letters. But we will focus on the male experience of school holidays. Politics-wise, we're going to be talking about Labour nationalising steel. There was the emergency recall parliament on Saturday, so we'll talk about how that's unfolding. Then at the back end of last week, because I didn't do a breaking news last week, there was a Patreon-only episode, so if you join that, you'll get that, but there was no breaking news. So I want to pick up on Kemi Badenoch's viral interview about adolescence. I know that we are still talking about adolescence, but this in its own way is another development in the story. It's a little plot twist. So we'll get into that. And if we've got time, we might talk about the raids on Turkish barbers. And in the Patreon only, the news broke in the comedy industry that there's going to be a British version of Saturday Night Live. All right. So we're going to discuss how that could work or what the potential pitfalls could be of a British version. I think the main thing they've got to do is, you know, Stig, in Saturday Night Live, where they go, "We're in New York, it's live, it's..." I think what they've really got to do is not film it in Brentford and say that they're in Brentford.
It's a pre-recorded Tuesday night in Brentford. It's not going to work
very
well.
It's Tuesday. This is pre-recorded or sort of going out as live. New patrons. So as you know, Stig, we roast them based on their names. So we got a couple of VIP patrons. Remember, so we just did the Patreon-only episode, and you get your question a guaranteed answer every single month, once a month. We got James Shaw. James Shaw. Do you know what James Shaw reminds you of? You know, one of those kind of like surprisingly charming senior civil servants?
Yeah.
Earning good coin.
It's also a name that you don't think happens anymore because everyone's called Augustus or Taciturn or something like that. Like James Shaw is like I'd have had a James Shaw in my class at school. And
yes.
You don't get Tim and John and James. You don't get many of them anymore, do you?
If you called a character in a detective story James Shaw, you go, that's a little bit on the nose. I've got to make one of those names weird.
Yeah, exactly. People just glaze over when they see it.
Phil Richards as well. We got another VIP, Phil Richards. Phil Richards, I think he probably works at a brick merchants. You know, one of those industries that is just massive, and every once in a while, people like me will do a corporate event there. And you just sort of go, yeah, bricks, of course. It's a big business.
And then from my point of view, it'll be one of those industries I never think about properly. And then something will happen, like we'll run out of bricks, or yeah, there'll be a great brick recall, or bricks will start spontaneously combusting. And then we'll all have to become, it's like with steel. We've all got to pretend we understand the difference between coal and coke and how you keep a furnace on and stuff like that, which of course no one in the media has the first beginnings of a clue about.
Yeah,
they've quickly Wikipedia'd 3 minutes before going on air. Oh yeah, coke. It's important you get the right coke in the steel process for virgin steel.
The funny thing this week was there was Labour front benches that were literally saying things like, the coke is in the country.
Yeah, yeah.
And I just thought that's the most they'll ever sound like Pablo Escobar.
Yeah.
We've also got Brendan Roach, who's joined. Brendan Roach, he sounds like one of those 90s garage MCs that still appears at events that are mainly advertised on lampposts. You know those ones where it's like, yeah, seven arenas, 4,000 DJs, ladies free before 11. You thought, do these things really happen? Do these events actually take place?
They do. And it's people like you go to them because it's people basically in their age between 40 and 60. There's a guy who works on Times Radio, and he went to a Butlin's 90s revival weekend with his mates from uni. That's what it is. It's people meeting their mates from uni who were 20 in 1997. They go to those sorts of
things. Do you know, I did a Butlin's 90s revival once, and I was there and I was talking to my wife about the sort of the lineup of acts. There was Patsy Palmer, obviously EastEnders. She's a DJ now, sort of get it. But then there was Cisco, who did the thong song. And I was like, the thong song, that was a noughties thing. I said, what the fuck is Cisco doing at a 90s weekender? And then my wife said to me, not unreasonably, Jeff, what the fuck are you doing at a 90s revival weekender? Yeah,
what were you in the 90s?
Yeah, exactly. And what part of the cultural zeitgeist were you surfing, Jeff? So Brendan Roach, probably going back to back with Norris to Boss Windross. We've also got Christopher Lee. Just Christopher Lee, that's brilliant.
Back from the dead.
Yeah, I mean, also fantastic as Count Dooku, one of the underrated characters in the underrated Star Wars prequel.
We're not gonna have that argument, are we? You're not a Phantom Menace guy, are you?
Look, I have said for years, just watch it again. That's all I say to people. Just watch it again. No. Make allowances for Jar Jar Binks, and it's a fucking good. It's a fucking good movie.
Do you know what? When I was thinking of my revival, when I was five, my mum took me to see all three. When Return of the Jedi came out, my mum took me to Loughborough Cinema, Curzon, and they had all three back to back to back. And so I watched all three from, like, I think it would be like 10 in the morning till 4 in the afternoon. It was all three of them. So my heart will always be for the old ones in a really boring fashion.
But in a way, couldn't that have worked? Like, you know when back in the day, a kid would try smoking and then their parents go, right, you'll smoke the whole pack.
Yeah.
You could have just vomited on Star Wars after all of that. And the main talking point, our super patron, David Domain, who picks up on things from previous week's show, we were talking about life expectancy. I thought the life expectancy of men and women had got quite close together, but David Domain says the latest data I can find from the Office of National Statistics on life expectancy at birth in the UK is 2022. That's the most recent. 78.6 years for males and 82.6 years for women. Compared with 2019, life expectancy has fallen by 38 weeks from 79.3. You'd have to think the pandemic had a little bit of an impact there.
I reckon it might be that we might have reached peak life expectancy for a while because everyone's so fat now, and I wonder if that's going to drag it down.
Yes, yeah. Also, just people have gone, oh God, there's actually no point. By the time you get to 80, most of the people that you enjoy spending time with are dead. So we're going to just start rolling it back. We'll end up back at 3 school years and 10.
Yeah, I think that's probably right.
We're going to do a thank you and a thank you this week because we're on our holidays and the weather's been good. We're going to show some gratitude. I'd like to thank people that are coming to the work in progresses. There's only four left that have any tickets left at all. Grimsby, Middlesbrough, Luton and Whitehaven. You go on the Live Nation site, you can get tickets. But there's a clip. If you want to check my socials to see what the shows are like, I've been doing a Q&A bit, Stig. I ran into what I would call Karen, the final boss, at Saffron Walden the other day. It's worth watching the clip. I mean, she just... there is this thing in comedy. People always presume that men will be the most troublesome at comedy gigs. Look, when they get violent, obviously that's the worst it can be at a gig. Majority, it's women that have had a certain amount of drinks that just... Like, if a bloke says something and you slap him down and everyone laughs, he'll shut the fuck up. That does not happen... with drunk female punters, no.
I would imagine the worst thing in the world and the group of people I'm most scared about in the whole of existence is hen nights.
Yeah, it's that times a million. And they also get very defensive. They're like, no, you know, you get people standing up going, this is Kelly's big night. How dare you? And the other thing is as well, is if you, because they often talk, because, you know, I'm going to stereotype here wildly, but you get a group of women together, if you do an observation and the women think that observation resonates, they'll quite often need to discuss that for fucking 10 minutes straight afterwards. So I always say, look, the point about observational humour is that it resonates. Just take it on trust. I've done the research and you can just listen. But then what they then do is they become like sort of school children. They'll start saying things like, are we getting told off for laughing? You go, well, I wouldn't tell you off for that, would I? Really?
No,
you
know, it's my job. I had a job handing out flyers for comedy gig in the Edinburgh Festival. And I remember this hen night were there and I tried to avoid them. So this is not going to come out well. And I still remember I still don't understand this. I walked up to them and said, do you want to come to this comedy gig? And they said, oh, what time does it start? And I said, oh, it starts at 9:45. And they went like this, ooh, 9:45, aren't you posh? We say 9:45. I was like, is that a thing? It's like saying the numbers, is that a posh thing?
No, when you're getting bullied by a group of women, you can't say, oh, this is really toxic and get upset. You have to just roll with it. Thank you. We're doing two thank yous. So you're saying you're in the Easter holidays, you're feeling good about life. What are you particularly grateful for?
Can I thank someone? I'm not sure she's going to be listening to this because I'm not sure she's your target audience, but it's old late. I was in the supermarket with my little one. I've been writing these books. And when you know this, Jeff, you've written a book. When you, the golden rule about writing a book is nobody cares about your book as much as you do. Oh, and the difference between how much you care and how much everyone else cares is it's the Grand Canyon. It's a giant abyss of not caring. And so I was walking over and this old lady grabbed me by the arm and she went to me, I just want to say I'm reading your book and I've read the other two and I love them. I just want to stay alive long enough to read all of the ones in the series you're going to write. And I don't know how she knew I was, and she just grabbed me. I just thought, that's so nice. Like you could have just ignored me. You could have just read the book quietly, but you've made me feel for like a flicker for 2 seconds something. So I'm very grateful to her.
Just looking at it the other way, that might have been a thinly veiled way of telling you to get a fucking wiggle on. You know, she's probably, you know what people can be like. She's sort of saying, the last one took a while. I'm not going to be around for it. I just want to stay alive long enough.
Okay.
For you to finish.
Don't ruin this
series.
Moment for me. My daughter's like, oh, that's nice. I was like, yes, finally, someone recognizes dad in front of a child.
That is very, very sweet. Thank you to that old lady. What most people think. Okay, we're going to talk about politics now, and we're going to start with the government, the Labour Party. What is this? 70s, is it? Nationalising steel, they love it. Okay, so on Saturday, there was big news breaking on Friday as Parliament was getting recalled, and it was to debate the nationalisation of British Steel. And first up, Stig, they wanted a lot of credit for doing politics on a Saturday, didn't they? Like when you saw the interviews with the MPs, my God, get over yourself. They're like, it's just so wild being here on a Saturday. You know, it's just got, you know, like there's everyone in retail going, oh, really? Yeah. Tell me more about what it feels like to get up early on a Saturday. It's not that big a deal, is it?
One of my pet hates, and this could be a fuck you if you like, but one of my pet hates is parliamentarians congratulating themselves for being parliamentarians. You know, they have these debates when like they're debating something, like someone's died or something like that, and often they come out and all the tame journalists, all the lobby hacks who are too close to the politicians, kind of, oh, it's parliament at its best. Yes. All the quality of the, oh, it's, this is where the British parliament really comes into its own as they're having a thoughtful debate. It's like, no, it isn't. It's still 600 broadly egocentric mad people just chuffing around for half an hour or 3 hours or 6 hours and then coming to the preordained conclusion anyway. Like, what's the point of a debate anyway? They have a massive majority. Mm. Everyone agrees with nationalizing it because there's no way, because everything's so fucked up, they can't do anything other than nationalizing. What was the point?
I mean, it's a good question. I wonder if it was partly Starmer wanted some buy-in, some public buy-in, because when this becomes very expensive, or potentially doesn't even work, because as we said, there's been problems of, have you got the Coke? You got the Coke? Yeah. Who's got the Coke? Who had the Coke last? And as you said earlier, we're all coming to knowledge about steel. If the blast furnace is shut for a bit, that's it, they're done. So you've got to keep them going. I mean, that I don't think that it does seem like the likely scenario, but if the British public paid all the money and it's shut anyway, your credibility would be shot through if we got to
but
that.
once you have Farage, and we had on our radio show Ian Duncan Smith on Tuesday or Wednesday of last week saying you've got to nationalize this. What I think is interesting is the politics of China, because if you look at the course of the last week, because Trump is so mad and Trump is so hostile, we were being pushed closer and closer to China all through last week, right up until the point everyone realized this plant was owned by Chinese people, a Chinese company, a private company, which doesn't exist in China. There's no such thing as a big private company in China. It means the Chinese state. And so now we're being marched down the hill again, having been told maybe China is the place for prosperity. We're now going to be suspicious of Chinese people again. And basically what's going to happen, I think, for the next 2 years, we're going to oscillate between China is the only place with money, and therefore we've got to have a close relation to China is trying to subvert and destroy our economy. We have better have nothing to do with them. And we're going to bounce between those two positions for the next year, I reckon.
I mean, it is weird, as you say, like the change in positions in the Labour government. I mean, Starmer himself, I do increasingly wonder whether he has any political solid convictions whatsoever. He increasingly seems like a stick of rock that doesn't have one letter that goes all the way through.
Yeah.
It's just like a wordless stick of rock, not even the minty kind, just a shitty stick of Blackpool rock. No shade on Blackpool, because he's gone from, you know, to get the leadership, nationalise stuff, then I'm not going to nationalise stuff. Even quite recently, we're not going back to the Labour Party of the 1970s. And there you go. The point is I think this is the right decision, but he makes himself a hostage to fortune in so many ways. And they're also, you know, you look at the extra cost of this, and they're still saying we're not going to be pulled away from our fiscal rules. At the same time as saying, the world's changed. Nothing will ever be the same again.
One of my many fiscal rules really annoy me, because they're arbitrary. The OBR has only existed since 2012 anyway. So it's not as if it's not been this grand British tradition. They're arbitrary anyway. So in 5 years' time, you basically, every time there's a problem, you say, oh, yeah, we'll fix it in year 4 and 5. And then every time you get close to year 4 and 5, you reset it again. So you never get to years 4 and 5. So it's all such palpable bullshit, but they have to take it seriously. But he seems a bit Teflon on this, because if you look at when he got elected to be Labour leader, his manifesto was basically a Corbynist manifesto. It's really, left wing. It was wealth taxes were in it, nationalisation, as you say. It was all that sort of mad, in inverted commas, lefty stuff. And then as soon as he got near power, he became more and more right wing. And he seems to be forgiven for it. I think in the end, because people think everyone else is useless, completely useless, and therefore they're willing to give him a break, because they don't really want the Tories. And no one quite believes, I don't think, reform is real. Now, that might change over the next couple of years, but at the minute, the idea that reform could pull together 200 ordinary MPs feels a long way away. Now, that might change, but it doesn't feel quite they've cracked that yet.
No, in a way, they're lucky. Well, you it's sort of like, I mean, if we want to make this topical, with Rory McIlroy winning the Masters, kind of reform are kind of five shots ahead, but there's still 4.5 years to play of the Masters. But what that might give them is time to get their kind of ground game together. And it was interesting to see Farage, who, you know, the great sort of Thatcherite libertarian, he was up there standing shoulder to shoulder with the workers. I mean, literally everyone was supporting this. I think even the ghost of Thatcher made an appearance in this debate to give her a blessing to it. It's not controversial, is it?
Really? No, the dirty secret of British politics is that Britain basically is a soft right country socially. So we're quite socially conservative, but we are economically left-wing, and we have been for 10 years. We want the state to chuck money at stuff. We want the state to give us furlough. We want the state to cushion everything. We want the state to, if any industry gets any problems, we want the state to step in. If any problem exists, we want the government to solve it. And actually, you can see this with Trump as well in America, the right is pretty economically left. And therefore, there's this great consensus. And the great consensus is, if it affects me and I'm about to be screwed, I expect the government to step in and fix it. And 20 years ago, you talk about Thatcher, the old Thatcherite Tories would never have said that. They would say some industries are deserved to die, some people deserve to struggle. No one is allowed to say anyone deserves to struggle anymore. And so the consensus in British politics, the reason why we have culture wars is we all argue about social politics, because then we can have a proper left-right. But actually, economically, everyone is more or less, late capitalism is basically half broken, therefore the government needs to do something to help us all. What most people think.
Okay, so we talk about Kemi Badenoch. Obviously, we all know about the fuss around adolescence. As I've said on this show, I thought it was a very good drama, but it was a drama, you know. It wasn't a documentary, as Keir Starmer said. Far too many signs times for it not to be a Freudian slip. Even the charity Children's Commissioner, actually, I saw her on air. I think it was on Five Live. She was saying, the final scene when the dad goes into the bedroom, there's all that tech. It's just, we can't have this with children. I take your point. It still was a drama, though. You know, I'm not saying that doesn't exist in the world, but the filter between this is a piece of fiction and reality seems to have disappeared for some people.
I don't want to come over all Kemi Badenoch here, but I've not seen it.
Right. I think this is a good point to start from, yeah. Right? So that puts you in line with the vast majority of people. So that's what I think most people have missed. They go 6.4 million views. That's a hell of a lot for Netflix. That's massive for Netflix. It's still less than 10% of the country, right? Yep. So when BBC Breakfast presenters, who look, I like both of those people and stuff, but when their attack line is essentially, my God, how could you not have seen this? They're also at odds with the consensus. And I suppose it was an example of what you get sometimes, which is just casual groupthink. Because you move in a world where pretty much everyone's seen it, it might seem alarming to you. But Kemi Badenoch, it sort of was quite a big success for her, that clip, wasn't it?
It was. Someone sent me a message from the Tory side saying this is the best moment in her leadership. It was literally the best moment in her leadership was her saying, I've not seen adolescence, and watching two BBC presenters who should have asked the question. She says no. Some people think, oh, maybe you need to be in tune with the zeitgeist. Mm. Some people would have said you should have watched it. Most people wouldn't care either way. Maybe you've scored a minor point, move on. And I do political interviews every single day, and I've got a co-presenter, Kate McCann, who is brilliant at them as well. I'd just like to think one of us would have nodded at each other and said, you've done 45 seconds on this. Shall we just fucking talk about something else?
But is there that point where it sort of becomes personal when two individuals that are interviewing or talking to each other essentially become irritated by each other? And so that filter that says, this is a bit of live telly where I should, you know, ask the question, offer balance, move on, goes, nah, actually, you've pissed me off here. Do you not think that you should watch it? I think Kemi Badenoch gave one answer, which is interesting, you know, how things play out on various social media. She said, I don't need to know to watch Casualty to know what's going on in the NHS. I don't think that's a completely direct comparison. But if you go on Blue Sky, Kemi Badenoch had a car crash interview where she shamed herself. I have to say, I think the vast majority of the British public would have found the persistent line of questioning odd.
People don't like hectoring. I mean, that's the... And now, Kemi's difficult. I've interviewed her maybe two or three times, maybe more than that. She likes a fight. Because in her mind, there's this slight Trump playbook, which is, if I can be having a row with the mainstream media, I'm appealing to my base. The reform lot love it. Well, they all hate the BBC anyway, but they hate the mainstream media, the fucking MSM. And therefore, she's half looking for a scrap anyway, Kemi Badenoch. She thinks it plays well. So I've had rows with her when I've not tried to have a row with her at all, but she wanted one. So I think she's not unhappy about it, but I just think she must have also been delighted because it's not going very well for the Tories. It's not been a very successful beginning to her leadership. Actually, we talked about playing out the clock. If 4 minutes, you go on BBC Breakfast for 8 minutes and four of those minutes is some people shouted at you for not watching a TV show, which most people haven't watched. And also, she knows loads about the subject. And as she kept patiently trying to say, I don't need to watch a drama to know that technology can be really difficult, but there's a problem with young boys and how they see themselves, that we've got this massive social media crisis and have for a long time. Mental health is a massive problem for teenagers, but it's also kind of partially a confected thing as well. All of those things are, we all know that. Anyone who consumes media, who reads, who looks around the world knows this stuff. So it's kind of a gift to her a bit to say, do I know about the problem of adolescent boys? Yes. Do I have to watch a trendy Netflix drama to prove that? No.
I mean, it is funny that the only potential drawback from her, and I do think it was a success, is that the main thing that the public knows about her is that she's that woman who eats steak for lunch and doesn't watch things.
Yeah.
That's what she polls really well on.
That's the dream. So someone who doesn't watch too much telly and eats a lot of protein, there's a lot of incels out there who'll be delighted about that.
We'll just do a quick one on the Turkish barbers. So it's one of these weird things where the Overton window of British politics changes, where what might seem quite xenophobic or even racist to say changes to quite a mainstream proposition. So if you go all the way back to the 2010 election, Gillian Duffy? Was that her name? The lady that got spoke to Gordon Brown about immigration.
Yeah,
bigot. She's a bigot. Like, oh,
bigoted woman. Yeah. And, you know, it was a long period throughout the 2010s where it took a while, you know, and it probably seeded a lot of the kind of basis of the vote for Brexit, or of it was kind of shut down. Now it's a mainstream proposition to get immigration down. I mean, even the Lib Dems, even the sandal-wearing, craft ale-drinking Lib Dems don't push back too hard. So it was interesting to see with the idea that some Turkish barbers are a front for organised crime. Richard Tice of Reform said this, and this was only in, I think, 3 or 4 months ago. He suggested that, and it was shouted down in some quarters as being racist, xenophobic, and a lot of things. And then, you know, sort of flash forward to last week, there were police raids on a number of Turkish barbers. So you would think that there was at least some cause for concern. I mean, there have been a lot that have popped up, and they are cash businesses. I mean, we've moved quite a lot in terms of how you can discuss this subject.
Yeah, and also I think one of the most boring things in all of British politics is people saying we're not allowed to talk about X, and it's always a subject that people fucking talk about the entire time. Immigration is like, no one's allowed to talk about immigration. It's like, people have been allowed to talk about immigration for a very, 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 very long time. I have my hair cut by a Kurdish barber, and I pay cash. And part of me does think, when we do these stories, I do think, am I contributing to something? But I also, he's quite a nice bloke.
Cuts good
hair.
He
does it quite cheap. It's the only time I ever touch cash. See, me, I think there's an argument that it's for tax reasons rather than organised crime, but I don't know. And even tax reasons isn't moral, is it? I mean, he should pay tax.
And I mean, one thing I would say is, when people talk about the amount of barbers that have appeared, there is an argument that there is a solid reason for that. Is one, young men cut their hair a lot more often, you know, a lot more. You know, they're much more image conscious. Then there's the other issue where there are a lot of vacant units on high streets, right? So what does the high street consist of now if it's not coffee shops and barbers? I mean, seriously, if you could send a drone, right, that could cut my hair and bring me coffee, the high street would die immediately. Because that is the main reason. Coffee, haircuts, getting your nails done. I mean, there's another example. Back in the day, getting your nails did, right, for women was an occasional treat. It was for weddings. It was a couple of times a year. Now it's kind of like once a month.
And their tax stuff as well. I'm sure that's a tax dodge as well, or organised crime, because you get four of them in a row. But like you say, maybe it's because the things are cheaper.
Well, the frequency, I mean, and I don't know if the business rates have come down just because councils want, they don't want empty units.
Can I throw in another reason why barbers do well is the rise of sculpted facial hair, or just facial hair generally.
Yeah.
Like when I was a kid, either my mum said this or she thought it, there were two people she was suspicious of. Bearded people and people with tattoos. Like, people with tattoos when I was growing up, if someone had a tattoo, you always had to take one step back from them because they were like, well, God, that's a bit odd.
Yeah, tattoo and a beard, that's basically a hipster now, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
Any bloke in shortage.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember when they came back in beards, because my dad had them in the 80s, and then they went out of fashion for a long, long, long time. And then in the early 2010s, they came back. And I think we've just gone back to the point where, yeah, men have beards. Hair grows on our face.
And also what I do is, because I used to shave my own beard, but I look like a twat. And so what I now do is I let it grow so I look a bit Santa on crystal meth. And then I go to the barbers and have my hair cut and the beard cut at the same time. And then I just get it done. And these places, which are, it's still not cheap, but it, you know, they do everything, do your whole head. There is a market for that. Now, do you think that if you pay cash, should you not pay cash? Here's a question, Jeff, for you. Is it morally wrong to pay cash for something like that, because you're basically you must be contributing to some sort of tax dodge? You must be.
Yeah, I think, you know, there's a couple of places where I live, a couple of takeaways. It's interesting. When you're in London, you can't get anywhere to accept cash. But the further you go out, you can't get people to accept cards. I think if I was working for the revenue, I would just go in town centres and any venue that refuses cards, I'd do a little investigation on them. And I don't want to be a snitch or whatever, but I would just say, as a hunch, there might be a fucking reason they're doing that.
That's what the state does. What about you, Jeff? Are you contributing? Is it your moral turpitude here for doing it, or is it just whatever's easier?
How much are we talking for the haircut? Because if we're talking less than 15 quid, you know.
My hair and beard, I think, is 27. Is that high?
If around where I live, if they're doing it cash for 12s, I'll turn a blind eye. Simple as that.
12's your moral limit, is it?
12 quid. Come on. I'm seeing change out of 15s.
Yeah.
Okay, just going to hype some stuff. Say hello to a couple more patrons. We've got John, one of those Johns, just J-O-N. So that means he's a Jonathan, right?
I never understood that. I think it's attention seeking. John is J-O-H-N.
Your name's Jonathan, mate. Yeah. Right? But then equally, I am called Jeffrey, which is a very different name for Jeff. But I'm not spelling it differently, John. John, I think John is part of a rowing team. Good for you, John. Thanks for being part of the Patreon community, although I just insulted you. And then we got Maggie Smith. And there you go. Is she, I mean, she isn't she
I think
dead?
She's dead. She's dead, yep.
So Christopher Lee and Maggie Smith, I think I'm sort of getting trolled from beyond the grave. And before we talk about Stig's book, I've just talked about Basic Bloke 2, which starts in mid-September. Let's just hype some of the big rooms. Leeds City Varieties, that one went on sale a bit late, but that's starting to shift. Crawley, that's like an 800-seater. That's moving nicely, thank God, because, you know, for my sins, I have to actually go to Crawley. Birmingham, I'm doing the town hall there. I don't know why we've gone up from doing a 300-seater to an 800-seater. I don't know what the business rationale is for this or where the evidence is, but please don't leave me hanging, Birmingham. Although parking, Jesus Christ, parking in Birmingham. Anyway, I once got caught. I parked in a multi-story and there was a Boyzone concert on. Have you ever been caught in a traffic jam in a multi-story car park where you don't leave for like 2 hours?
I find multi-story car parks, they're like a version of hell for me. I don't like the steep turns. I get lost in them really easily. I feel like I'm always going around the wrong way, even though there's big signs. They get inside my head, multi-story car parks.
Yeah, and you never know which floor the fucking pay station is on. And also I'm doing Chelmsford for the first time. So Stig, your book, is it out now?
Yeah, it came out end of March.
This one, so this is the third in these detective series. Are you getting quicker at writing them? Is the process getting snappy?
I am crazy quick at writing them because I love doing it. And in fact, my biggest problem at the minute is I've got a deal to write 6 of them. This is the third. I've already written the fourth and the fifth ones. And when I'm not writing, I don't know if this is true with your comedy, Jeff, but when I'm not writing, I become more and more depressed. Like, I quite like doing it. And if I don't feel I'm doing it, I kind of feel a bit useless. I don't know if it's true for you when you're not doing at all or you're not writing at all. I feel like I could write the next one now, but it's ridiculous. It's 2 years till the fifth one comes out. I feel like a tit. So I'm not writing. And so I'm kind of gripped by self-loathing. And the only time I feel less self-loathsome is when I'm writing. But there's you only write so many books. So I quite like doing it, is the thing.
Yeah, I think what you need to do so you can feel like you're productive is maybe like get a breakfast show where you get up at 3 a.m. or something like that. You know, I mean, just to have a purpose in life, I'd recommend that. So what is the plot of this one? You say it's based around experiences you had with your dad at kind of visiting historical sites.
Yeah, so the plot of the series generally is this guy, Jake Jackson, he leaves the city and he gets given a house where there's no internet, there's no radio, there's no phone. And so part of it is kind of a way of thinking about how much intrusion we've got with our phones and how much would you like to get away from it before you went mad. And so you might think it's perfect, but actually you'd get sucked back in, A, to relationships, B, to society a bit, and C, if it's a crime drama, you actually need some crimes to happen. So he gets sucked into solving crimes in his local area. There's an archaeological dig near where he lives, and it's quite a grand tradition in crime writing. Agatha Christie was obsessed with archaeology. Her husband was an archaeologist. And when I was a kid, we were on holiday all around Britain, England and Wales mainly. We just go to old castles and old forts and standing stones. And my dad loved it. And actually, by the end of it, I loved it. But at the time, my brother and I, we used to sit in the back of the car. My brother was 2 years older. He fucking hated it. And I remember my dad turning around to him one day. This is a classic dad move, this. And my brother was like rolling his eyes, going, I don't want to see another, you know, half-filled bit of a trench where Romans used to live. And my dad turned around to him and he went, how can you not be interested in this? How can anyone not be interested in this? And my brother, who was like 15 at the time, was like, no one is interested in this other than you. And his sort of dad monomania dragged us round to all these sort of English heritage places. But it did work. It seeped into my brain and then I got into a love of history. So I'm now trying to do the same with my kids.
I think part of your 40s as a bloke is realising the things that your dad was right about.
Yeah.
And I realised a couple of things my dad was right about. His marmalade is just better to have in the morning, some more challenging, zesty flavour. Jam is for losers, that's what he used to say. And also that filter coffee with cream is the best kind of coffee. And I think that we lost a lot in this country where we moved towards Americano. So you realise they were right. Trains are cool. Trains are cool. Austin, sort of following on from that, you know, it's Easter. There are a lot of dads that will be off with their kids right now. And I was just thinking of some of the unique challenges that dads face. Not saying women don't face challenges, but some of the unique ones. And one came up for me last week at Chessing World of Adventures, where my son wanted to go on this thing called Mandrill Mayhem, which is part of Jumanji World. It's good, right? The Chessing, by the way, really up their game. But this roller coaster, you could see it, and like it sort of goes around most of the Jumanji bit. People just screaming every like 3 minutes. And I was like, I'm not sure about this, man. I'm not sure about this. You go backwards, you twist upside down. So my wife, she played her wife privilege mum card, where she's like, oh, not for me, son, not for me. So I went on it, and I was genuinely sort of trepidatious about the whole thing. I had to stifle my screams while I was on it. And when it came to a halt, I basically confected this lie that the harness was stuck. But what I was actually doing, Stig, was buying myself time for the blood to return to my legs so I didn't collapse like a fucking fish by the side of the ride. But then the staff became concerned that there really was a problem. And then also I sort of thought, you know, I might have shown strength to my son, but have I also given him a lifelong fear of harnesses? It's complicated, isn't it? Have I done the right thing there?
You've done the right... I've got lots of thoughts on this, Jeff. A, I'm not willing to go on roller coasters anymore. I don't trust people. There's always one a year which goes wrong. And one a year is too much of a risk for me for the reward. There's always one. I feel the same about fairgrounds where I grew up in Loughborough. There's a fair every November. And I always looked down and the harness was always wobbly and I was just clinging on for dear life. I looked down and someone sort of smoking a fag and ignoring this complicated machinery. So I'm not up for it anymore. But I'm also, the other thing I'm not willing to do, Jeff, I'm not trying to create a mini me. You know, dads who want their kids to love everything that they love.
Yeah.
I'm not willing, even though I've kind of half ended up with my dad. If my kid wants to go on a roller coaster, go on a fucking roller coaster. I'll watch you. I'm not into it. I don't want you and I to have exactly the same things. I don't want to create a mini me. I don't want him, if my son follows Forrest, because I follow Forrest, that's great. But I'm not going to batter him for 3 years until he finally fucking accedes to it and says, all right, I'll follow Forrest. And dads who do it send me mad. Dads who say, I'm only happy, I'm only a successful dad if I've mini-me'd my kids.
See, this sounds like a very complex way of getting out of going on a roller coaster.
Truth,
that's what I'm hearing.
Truth. Yeah. I don't want to go on one. I don't enjoy them. I don't want to feel dizzy. I don't want to go on a roundabout.
You know, dizzy, I'm with you. Anything that spins. Yeah. There was one roller coaster which spins as it goes down. Fuck that. I was sort of getting into more, if we're talking about men's stuff here. I sort of put it out there as a clip on my social media discussing this issue. And it sort of occurs to me that I'm one of these guys that's out there saying, hey, show emotions, be all this stuff. And it occurred to me that I haven't yet cried in front of my son, not like properly, you know. And I thought, shit, he's like 9 now and he hasn't seen that. And I don't know where, because with my dad, I didn't see him cry until we had to have our cat put down.
Oh.
And he, I think the pressure of it and stuff. But I was 8 then and we've gone till 9, you know, again, is it this thing that am I doing that for me or for him? Like, if I cry in front of him, does he just think, okay, well, I feel less safe? Yeah, best get a guard dog, you know.
I don't think I've ever seen my dad cry.
Yeah.
And I'm 45. And that's funny because I'd be the same thing that I don't think I've let my kids have seen me cry. Mm. And I've got a 16-year-old daughter, a 13-year-old son, and a 6-year-old daughter. And there is something about it that you don't want to show weakness. And I know maybe we all should, but if I'm, you know, if I started crying when Rory McIlroy, you know, when Rory McIlroy won the Masters and cried, I felt a bit choked for him. And I didn't think any less of him because he was crying.
No, but I've always said that top athlete males, that's the only public context where men are allowed to cry, birth of a child, funeral, and if they win the Masters.
Birth of my children, I cried all 3 times, actually. Yeah. That's true. But I don't think my kids ever saw me do that. So,
well, did they come out going, for fuck's sake, this guy?
Yeah,
midwife going, it's not about you, mate.
Yeah, right? Yeah. But I'd choke it back if I was ever about to cry. I would choke it back. For what reason?
It's interesting. Yeah, it's interesting because we've grown up in an age, we move in this fancy poncy world of media where we're always encouraged to get these feelings out. And yet maybe there's something genetic in there. I was also thinking about men on, you know, if there's any men with maybe younger kids listening to this, I do think that if they're off for the school holidays, I think there are some blokes that is quite anxiety inducing. There's something about going on holiday with your family. You love it. You have the best time. But right at the beginning, it's such a change to your normal thing. You go, trapped. And it takes a while to get used to it.
I also slightly count the days on holidays because I also think by day 4, we have run out of things to do. I'm the pool. I think one dad job is to be the pool guy.
Yeah.
And so what I've said to myself is we often end up in places with freezing pools. We never seem to get a heated pool wherever we go. And my wife doesn't like being cold. She doesn't really like being in swimming pools. So I've basically said to myself, I've done it for 16 years now, yeah, whenever one of my kids wants to be in the pool,
yes,
however I feel, I'll go in the pool. I'll stand there freezing my tits off, pretending to have fun whenever they want to do that. And I think that's a dad job, because I don't think generally women like being cold.
I think you're absolutely right. You know, like, there is something about a woman on holiday where there's a way that they lie and look at the sun, like they absolutely submit to the sun gods. Whereas the one thing that blokes used to be able to do on holiday, which I quite liked, was find a place that sold today's newspaper. Like, it was like hunting, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So you'd sit down for 20 minutes, it's too hot, babe, I'm going to get a newspaper. And it just, I would just break up the day with like little missions.
Yeah.
Little missions. Oh, babe, I'm going to go and get you a Solero, whether you want one or not.
Yeah.
You're getting a fucking Solero. So, look, I'm just expressing solidarity to the dads out there that find that being off for all this time at Easter is a little bit on top. You should feel seen at this point. You should feel seen.
What most people think.
Okay, now for everybody else in the Patreon only, we're going to discuss the fact that Britain is getting his own version of the US show Saturday Night Live. For everybody else, it'll be the end of the show. Stig, thank you so much for appearing on the show. I think we should give a name check to the title of your book again.
It's called The Burial Place. Jeff, could I thank you for coming on Times Radio? We fucking love you on Times Radio. I love your show Friday night. Not everyone can do it, and you do a great job.
Oh, mate, where's my kid? Because he might see me crying now. He might see me cry. No, it's fun. I mean, the only thing, I don't know if you get, is when you're doing a three-hour slot, the first half hour, I have a bit of anxiety because you go, this is a long time to talk. But I guess... second night, you get the anxiety when you're not doing it. I've worked that out about you now, Stig.
Yeah, you've got
so
exactly.
I'm gonna say, could I say to you that I hope you enjoy your holiday. You have earned it. Let's be like these modern touchy feely men.
Yeah.
It's okay to enjoy this time, Stig. Okay.
Cool. Thank you, Jeff.
You've written the next 20 novels in this series. Take five. And listen, I would say there's a strong likelihood with global and domestic politics being as they are that there'll be a breaking news episode this week. But Stig, thanks very much for being on the show. And I'll speak to you guys soon.